Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you. And that was Parachute Club. Wow. Welcome back, everybody. And joining me in the studio right now are Kim Rudd, your Liberal candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South, and Rob Washburn. He is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, back to school as well. And so welcome both of you. Kim, welcome to the studio.
Dave. Thank you, Dave.
Now, I know we've had you in here before, but this is a different interview we're doing because we're introducing you to maybe some people who don't know you, maybe some people have been listening. We've been tweeting about the fact that you were coming on here. I've been talking
and
about
I've been retweeting it
for a few days. So I guess we should ask you first off. We've asked every other candidate, so we'll start with the same question with you. You know, the Conservatives have really made the issue of a resume an important factor in this election, especially, you know, you hear, you know, that Justin Trudeau's not ready, and then the same thing with Mulcair. You know, what are they really campaigning on? And, I mean, let's look at your resume. Let's talk about what you've done. You're a longtime resident of Northumberland Peterborough South.
I am so. My husband Tom and I have lived here almost 40 years. It's my oldest daughter, Allison's 36th birthday today.
Oh, is that right?
Yes,
but my son's 24 today.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
She's a teacher in Kitchener-Waterloo and with her family. And my youngest daughter, Stephanie, is a law partner at Third Street Law here in Coburg. Long roots here, as I said, and my children, grandchildren being here. I've had a commitment to this community in various ways, as you know, whether it was starting Cook School Daycare, which tomorrow is having its ribbon cutting for its 30th anniversary.
Wow.
I was one of the founding members of that, and it's something I'm very proud of and near and dear to my heart. Still providing licensed childcare to residents of Northumberland County, both in a center-based setting as well as a home-based setting. We were pioneers in 1987 when we started the home childcare portion of it. So pretty exciting to me. Also, we started one of the rural child care pilot projects on-farm child care in those days, something that was quite cutting edge at the time.
And still going strong,
and,
obviously, to this day.
You know, well, the on-farm rural child care, as sometimes happens with pilots, things happen, and unfortunately there wasn't a sustainability in the community. And I think part of that is because our agriculture community is getting older. There are just less children on the farm.
Right.
The I've also been president and owner of Willis College, the only private post-secondary education facility in the county, and it actually started in 1992. I owned it for 13 years and sold it a few years ago. I own Archer First Aid and CPR Training, one of the 40-some-odd licensed by WSIB in the province of Ontario, and we train all across Ontario. And all my staff members, however, are local. So
wow,
I'm very
okay.
proud of that as well. And as you know, I was chair of the physician recruitment that brought eight family physicians to the area as well, my volunteer jobs. And, you know, I've been president of the Chamber of Commerce, on the board of hospice, chair of children's services. I'm very proud of the contribution I've been able to make to this community. Having said that, I'm in a position in my life where I can make those contributions, and I'm grateful for that. Growing up, my life wasn't always – we weren't as fortunate. So I believe I bring a perspective to this role as a future member of parliament, that when I knock on someone's door and they're telling me some of the challenges and hardships, mm-hmm. having experienced some of that growing up, I understand. And I don't pretend to have all the answers, but sometimes people just need to know that you really do understand what they're going through. Mm-hmm. So thrilled to be here as always. And you know me, I'll take any question from anyone at any time.
Well, getting things done seems to be sort of your persona. I mean, you know, you saw a need in childcare. You and a group of folks got together, made that happen. You saw a need in education or a hole there. You saw that happen. Always employing local people. So really, from an economic development perspective, you've probably got more street cred out there than even a lot of the candidates across the country.
I've created about 50 jobs in this riding mm-hmm. So far.
Sustainable jobs.
Sustainable.
Too.
They've been here for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the daycare is 30 years old. And in fact, the first person we hired as an early childhood educator is the executive director. And she's still with the organization, as are a good number of the staff. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's not just about creating a job. It's about creating jobs that are sustainable and decent paying jobs.
And you've also had to work with various levels of government as well and different parties.
Absolutely. I remember.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about your ability to work across the spectrum, Kim.
Well, when my carers took away the childcare subsidies in Northumberland County and they said we wouldn't get them back, I got a couple people together and we fought. And, you know, I'm all about the team. And we were able to get them back. I remember debating Janet Ecker on CBC TV with Claire Hoy and Judy Rebick mm-hmm. on Face Off. And so it was a couple of years ago. But just the ability to be able to go and have an opportunity to have people understand your position and listen to their position. At the end of the day, I always think we get better solutions that way. Mm-hmm. I presented to standing committees on finance and justice federally. I was part of the group that helped Ken Dryden build the child care portion of the Kelowna Accord. I currently was appointed to Justin Trudeau's economic team a couple of weeks ago, and I'm very honored to have that appointment. But on the other hand, I accepted the appointment because for the last year and a half to 2 years, I have been asked for my advice, and my advice has been taken. I see that as the right way to go, that we need to be getting the information from candidates that are on the ground, getting the information what we're hearing as we go. We've done over 25,000 households. We need to be – that information needs to be listened to. Mm-hmm. That's where our solutions will come from.
So I have two things I'd like to talk about based on that, and that's the economic team. People don't always understand what that means. Could you maybe explain to us in simple terms, what does that really mean?
So the economic team, which was announced a couple of weeks ago by Justin Trudeau and Paul Martin, is comprised of people like John McCallum, former economist with the Royal Bank, Chrystia Freeland, Ralph Goodale, former Minister of Finance, and me and others. We were all appointed to this team because we come with a certain level of expertise in certain areas. You know, that's the beauty of a team. You need different aspects to be part of that discussion. So there are three of us that have been appointed to the Small Business and Economic or Small Business and Entrepreneurship team. The other local candidate is from Whitby. And the other candidate is outside of our area. And the job the three of us will have is to spearhead that next team in developing jobs and the economic engine that we need in this riding and this country around small business and entrepreneurship. And I believe that's where the jobs are going to come.
So that's very good for you and mm-hmm. very prestigious, obviously. But what does it mean for us as voters here in Northumberland?
Well, a couple of things. I certainly think it raises the profile of the riding. I have been talking for the past year and a half to 2 years to Justin Trudeau and the party about what we look like. I'm just an example. We're now, as this riding, a very rural riding. We don't even have a city in it anymore. And I can remember when Justin Trudeau was running for leadership, he said, I was his Eastern Ontario co-chair. And he said, Kim, what about Eastern Ontario? What do I need to know? I said, why don't I take you? So I picked him up in Ottawa at noon after caucus on Wednesday, and for 2.5 days, he and I drove through Eastern Ontario. He sat beside me, I drove. And we stopped at the Flying J, we stopped at Loyalist College. Rob, I think you were there actually at the time. Queen's University at the Tim Hortons in Port Hope, at the CCC in Cobourg. We just stopped for 2.5 days because it's important, I think, for a leader to be out listening to Canadians. At every stop we made, there was engagement. There was any question you want to ask. They were not scripted questions. They were not vetted questions. Mm-hmm. They were questions from people who wanted answers.
Well, and these events were open to everyone.
Absolutely.
I myself actually had the opportunity to ask Justin Trudeau a couple of questions too. So very, very impressed by that, you know. I mean, I got to admit, and I've said this a few times, and I know my good friend Tommy Humphreys, who hosts a blog rather in the financial sector, he and I joked that I used to say if Justin Trudeau became the leader of the Liberals, I would be his John Diefenbaker, because I just didn't think that he had what it takes. And then I had the opportunity to meet Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. And you know, you see these ads on television that say he's just not ready, or he just doesn't get it. But when you get the opportunity to speak to him, and you realize he's a genuine guy. He really is. You know, one of the questions that went out over the last election was, who would you rather have a beer with, right? Somebody asked me that. Who? Now you've interviewed all the candidates in the riding, who would you rather have a drink with? And I said, in this riding, I don't think there's a candidate that I wouldn't have a drink with. I just don't know who would be unwilling to have a drink with me. And that's become pretty clear, unfortunately. But that's the difference between someone who is the leader of a team, the leader of a party, and just being the leader.
Well, to Rob's point about the economic team, there are other teams. There's councils, one on the environment, one on health care, one on veterans and retired military, there are retired police. There's one on child care, of which I have been a contributor.
There's a national housing strategy.
That's right. Those are teams made up of people without a political stripe. It's the best, you know, as a business owner, I always say I don't have to be the smartest person in the room, but I have to have the smartest people in the room.
Absolutely.
You mentioned you had been out, and how many doors has it?
Well, we've done over 25,000.
So 25,000 doors you've knocked on. What are the issues people are talking to you about at the doorstep?
Well, you know, interestingly, from a lot of seniors, you talked about the ads, Dave. Those ads that sort of just go to the edge of not being truthful that Mr. Harper's put out about income splitting. Seniors will say to me, well, I want to vote for you, or I'm Liberal, but Justin Trudeau is going to take away our income splitting for seniors. And we have said over and over again, Justin Trudeau has clearly said we are not going to take that away. We believe it's good policy. But, you know, like everyone else, we're busy. We only hear some things. And so I'm hearing that. And it's good to be able to counter that at the door and sort of give people the correct information. We're hearing that people are struggling. They're worried about, we've got a lot of shift work happening. We've got a lot of minimum wage jobs happening. And families are struggling to meet ends meet. I'm getting a lot of good response about our fairness plan and our child care benefit that won't be taxable, which is actually more money in parents' pocket, especially from what I'll call the younger parents with young children. I had someone come into the Brighton office. I was mentioning to you early, we're the only team that has four offices in the riding. You know, we've gone to the constituents. We haven't expected them to come to us. And Brighton opening was a week or so ago, and a woman came in, and she was emotional. She has a daughter who just finished university, 5 years, has a huge debt, and the prospects are not good, nor are they for the young woman's partner or boyfriend. And she's trying to decide what to do. Jobs will be the number one driver, I think, of the success of this riding, particularly in the country. And I'll be providing a jobs platform just for this riding as soon as the national one's been released.
Okay, well, on that note, we're going to take our first break for the show. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political talk show. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio, my guest today, Rob Washburn, my usual co-host for our episode of Consider This, and Northumberland Peterborough South Liberal candidate, Kim Rudd. We will be right back. And welcome back to Northumberland 89.7. I am your host, Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time right here, Canada's only holistic political talk show. We do have a question, and we're going to get to our first question here. What will you do, Kim, if elected to create business in this riding for professionals, people with degrees, to live and work here and to grow our local economy? So professionals is what she's talking about.
Well, Dave, there's certainly my main focus is about jobs, because our communities become more prosperous when we have people making a decent living. There's no question about it. You know, we're in Coburg, and we look at our downtown and know it's struggling. And part of the reason it's struggling is because people don't have disposable income. professional jobs come with professional companies. So one of the challenges right now is access to capital. We need to be able to help businesses be able to come here and use their technology, their capabilities, their research and development to create value added, either products or services. And when I say value added, I said this to someone the other day. There is a whole segment of our financial institutions that simply move money around to mm-hmm. make money.
Yep.
There's nothing that actually is value added or comes out of that. So I'm not saying we don't need them, but they're not producing anything that someone else will then buy and produce, or you know, the chain, if you will, of manufacturing or service. So what we have to do is a couple of things. One, the education piece will come into it. We have to make sure that our young people especially are being educated in things that do have jobs and that they understand where those jobs are. Mm-hmm. They will if we can provide them with the scope of what the qualifications are. If you take these are what your opportunities are in these kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. We know research and development has been cut so much. We know that the innovation is something that we are lagging behind greatly. With the increase in those two things come jobs. The professionals are hired in. Mm-hmm. So it's a process. You can't say, well, so-and-so is going to locate here and they will have professional jobs. They'll probably have some. But what we're looking for are niche markets, if you will, that we have an opportunity to not just bring something here, but let it be the catalyst for other things mm-hmm. coming. And what the sort of level of those jobs will be will depend on what we can attract.
I just want to do a follow-up on that one. I'll ask about the specifics too. But the follow-up on that, in my mind, is, I mean, you were on the doctor recruitment process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem for recruiting doctors here is they're married to professional people. So how were you able to overcome that with a lot of those doctors?
Yeah, a couple of things. Well, and we weren't with some of them. Let's be clear. Some of them did not come for that very reason. One thing is transportation. We have a reasonably, with the VIA train, the commuter train, if someone is a professional, they can go west.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody wants to spend that kind of time traveling. If they're not in the downtown core, that does certainly become problematic. We all know what the driving into the GTA on a Tuesday morning looks like, or driving home. So they didn't all come. We were able to offer a quality of life, the attractive people, and they made their own decision about what that balance looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, there were some doctors who came with spouses. Actually, my neighbor is one, and his spouse is working in Peterborough. She was able to find she's in research, and she was able to find that job. And we did some of that research to help them to find out where it was. But the reality is we had to say we didn't have a lot, and there was going to have to be commuting involved. I would love to be able to say 5 years from now, mm-hmm. that we have some businesses here that have those opportunities for those people coming in. And I'm going to work darn hard to make that happen.
Well, I guess that was my question, was what types of businesses are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, people can make vague promises about bringing business to this mm-hmm. area. I mean, mm-hmm. every politician does it. But what are we talking about concretely? Because, you know, a lot of the way that our province is set up is that if you want a professional job, you have to leave this area. You can't really do it here. So can you be specific about, give us some
sure.
examples of the types of things you see coming in or what you'd mm-hmm. like to attract?
Small business and entrepreneurship, I think, speaks to that. Because what we often find, and there are so many in this area that we don't even know about, that they are operating, they're small. Maybe it's just them. Maybe it's a couple of people, businesses that are happening. We have considered ourselves a center of excellence for plastics. That was certainly something that we were actively pursuing. And it kind of got dropped, I won't say dropped off the agenda, but maybe was not as robustly pushed forward. It's something we're coming back to. In fact, I met with someone yesterday that's in the west part of the riding that is doing some plastic extrusion, and I actually made some contact phone calls today to see if he needs a little bit to help him get going. It's 15 to 20 jobs. So I made those calls today, and hopefully we'll be going down that road. I think the other thing is there is there's a view, I guess, from my perspective, that there are synergies within this riding and the ridings around us, and I think of Trenton as the perfect one. We used to manufacture specific parts for specific things in Trenton for the base, and we don't. They're all offshore. Let's face it, we are not going to compete. Let's use the auto sector as an example. Costs all in for the auto sector in Mexico are $8 an hour, all in. In Canada, they're $55 an hour. So we know that's not going to work for us long term. And, you know, now the dollars and the situation it is, things are even a little bit more
precarious.
Unclear. That's a good word. So what do we do? Well, we know that we have to find other things that will provide opportunities. I'm going to go back to the auto sector. It's not just GM making it the car. It's the other places that are supplying GM with, whether it's CPK, the old Davidson Rubber, you know, had how many, 1,200 employees at one time, and they're down to significantly less than that, I think a couple of hundred maybe. But many businesses that we've seen gone here are because of the auto sector. So what is it that we could find that could be a catalyst that could then promote other businesses growing in this area? So plastics is certainly one of the areas we're looking at, and part of the reason I had my meeting yesterday. But we've been talking to some other people as well. And as I said, the jobs platform will be coming out, and you'll see more about it there.
One of the things that your party has promised, though, is that they're going to invest in infrastructure to help stimulate the economy to create jobs. But to do that, they're going to have deficits. And your party's been the only one that has said very clearly, deficits is part of this. We've heard for the last 30 years that deficits in government are bad things. Why are you doing this? Can you explain why this is advantageous to us?
Sure. And I think that the whole deficits are bad. Deficits, as they relate to GDP, you know, there's a whole calculation. It's not just deficits good, deficits bad. There's a whole sort of economic argument around this. Given our current situation in terms of our GDP and other things, $10 billion as a deficit really is not much as a percentage. I think it's less than 0.1%. In the last 8 years, Stephen Harper has created deficit budgets. It's supposedly someone who was never going to create a deficit budget. Therefore, increased our debt. And I believe the increase has been more than all the other governments combined up to that point. And what do we have for it? We have 2% higher unemployment that happened last week. We have a dollar that's not good. We put all of our – we, Mr. Harper, put all of our economic eggs in the oil sands basket. And we found ourselves with – and when we – and the unemployment numbers, I think, are not even close to being a true reflection of what the underemployment and real giving up even looking for work population is. So – we have to do something different. Mr. Mulcair saying that he's going to balance the budget in the first year no matter what is irresponsible. You don't know what kind of mess you've got. So what are you going to cut to get there? Infrastructure is one of the ways that we have such a win-win. We're going to put people to work in good-paying jobs. And to the question that came from one of your listeners, they are – one can determine what professional means, but they're good paying and skilled jobs, I would argue, with infrastructure. We will work with the municipalities and the provinces to figure out what that looks like for all of them. And I had a chance to chat again with the mayor of Brighton, with Mayor Wallace, and I promised him I would work as hard as I could to get some support for the infrastructure that Brighton needs, given their current water situation or lack of water situation, as well as their effluent problem going into the bay. So if you take the benefits of creating jobs, middle class pays the biggest portion of income tax in this country. You're going to be increasing that income tax contribution to the coffers over the period of time. You're going to be fixing the woman in Lang, just north of Keene. She owns a Peachy Keen restaurant, and she was telling me the bridge to her home has just been put out of commission because one of the supports under it is gone, and they're looking at a year before they can fix it. But those are the kinds of things that
But these jobs that are created through the infrastructure spending are jobs that are skilled trade jobs. These are not jobs. We were talking earlier about young people that are coming out with degrees in arts and science and professional jobs and those kinds of things. How does that work then, and how is it advantageous?
Well, a couple of ways. One, those companies that are hiring or being created to respond to this need to build infrastructure. And we have to remember, infrastructure is not just roads and bridges. Infrastructure can be community centers. It can be libraries. It can be whatever the communities in the province decide it needs. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to a young man in Orono the other day. He's a carpenter, and he's not 25. And he is a carpenter, and he gets 3 days of work, and then he's off for a day or two. And then he gets 3 days of work, and he's off for a day or two. He has no benefits, precarious work. Something like this would give him some traction in terms of this. And all those businesses hire professionals. They require engineers to build them. Mm-hmm. They require, you know, a health and safety nurse to be on site. They require – there's all sorts of things that come along with that. So we have to – we have to look at the holistic or global perspective of what that creates.
Absolutely, and I love the fact you used the word holistic.
Because, well, I did it just for you,
thank
Dave,
you.
Because
thank
this
you very
is
much.
The holistic
And by
job.
The way, just to clarify the question with regards to businesses and professionals, I was just handed a note from Joanna here who asked the question, by the way, and what she meant by professional jobs was she meant by like job office jobs, you know, accounting assistants perhaps, secretarial pools, what have you. We do have a caller online, though, and we are going to go right to that call.
Good afternoon.
Good day.
Well, welcome to the show, Ed.
Well, thank you, sir.
Hello, Ed. Good to hear from you.
Hello, hello. Hey, my kids went to Cook School when it was still part of the education system.
Okay, then your kids are older than mine.
Yeah, they're they were the last group out of there, I think, before the daycare started.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to ask you is there's a lot of talk about infrastructure, and one of the big things in Port Hope that's been hanging over our heads for 40 years is a very large infrastructure program of moving low-level radioactive waste. And it seems like nothing has happened in all that length of time. There's been study after study, and I think they're going through now the third or fourth, you know, testing of all the houses and everything in town. Again, it's been done three or four times already. I'd just like to know, would your administration have any plans for, A, getting something done, and B, assuring that the jobs in that are local? And what I mean by that is that you don't hire some huge trucking company out of Toronto and all the trucks are, you know, running out of Toronto instead of hiring the local guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ed, interesting you bring that up. I've actually had a tour of a personal tour of the facility at just at the border. I'm sorry, I've just lost the name. It's called not the Port Hope site, but the Port Granby site.
Oh, Port Granby, yeah.
I tell you, it is a technological wonder what they've done there, and certainly something is moving there. It is. I've seen the facility in action, mm-hmm. or at least in prototype action. And they're addressing the concern. There's actually a group out of Port Granby that has put together a wildlife sanctuary plan for once the land is remediated, which is exciting to see.
It is. It's very good with this series of trails and whatnot.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm, you know, out of some challenging times often come some very good things. In terms of the Port Hope, I've also had tour. John McKay, who is our environment critic, and I toured with some folks from the Fay, and we saw some of the sites and had some discussion around the plans. As I understand it, it is a standalone organization that makes these decisions, whether it's technically a board, but it's certainly its own entity that was provided with X number of amounts of money to address the problem. I'm not sure what role the federal government actually plays in making the determinants, if any, actually, of making the determinants about who gets what contracts or who does what. But it is something that the federal government does have a responsibility to deal with because it was part of the old El Dorado, as you know.
Yeah. Well, I understood that it was that the Port Hope Area Initiative was is a fed organization being funded by the feds. Like it skips over the provincial and it's above the municipal.
I just think it's an arm, what I would call an arm's length, more from the federal government, similar to a Via Rail or a Canada Post. That's my understanding. Somebody may have more information about that, but that's my understanding.
Well, I mean, they built us a nice road in that length of time. You've got, you know, Pemberton Drive up there to the mound.
And a soccer field.
And, well, yeah, that's part of it, but they haven't, and a very nice soccer field, I might say, like another building. But we've had this stigma over the town, and it's gone on too long. Like, it's been like 40 years.
Yeah, and I don't, my understanding is they're looking at wrapping it up in, I want to say 2021. Like, it's still going. It's still some time to go. So,
well, that's the third bump back of
yeah.
Of you know.
But you know what I can say is, Ed, is I have been briefed, and if I'm fortunate enough to be your MP, I certainly have made some very good relationships within this and other organizations in the riding, and I would I'm sure they'd be happy to keep me on top of it.
Well, you know, it's the thing around town is you look at that place on Toronto Road, and like the, you know, there's got to be 150 people working there, it seems, because the parking lot is completely jammed on a daily basis. You know, we know people that have retired from the Port Hope Area Initiative that's been their entire career, and we're still stuck. And I'm looking at it from a couple of standpoints here. One is you were never going to get business to come in here if this is over our head all the time.
Well, I don't think I'd agree with that, Ed. I think that there are opportunities for businesses to come to Port Hope, as well as Cobourg, as well as Newcastle, as well as Campbellford, as you know, anywhere in the riding. It is more than just finding a place to put a building as a business. We have lots of things to offer new businesses, and I know that there are folks out there trying to sell that, and they need a partner at the federal government level to do that.
What I would be hoping that the federal government
I'm certainly committed to doing that.
Kind of overcome the stigma thing that, you know, we do have a lot to offer. There's recreation and everything else, and I would hope that they would be part of that economic development.
Sure. That'd be my job as the MP.
There you go.
Thanks, Ed.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ed.
Now, we did get a couple of – apparently there's a couple of questions on Facebook, and I'm just going to check the Twitter.
And I'm going to go back to the comment about, you know, office jobs, administrative, et cetera. The challenge with a lot of that is those jobs have disappeared. No one has a front desk receptionist anymore. Everything is an automated phone call. I remember back in the day in Montreal, you know, they had a real switchboard. Of course, I remember teletype, so that's not a good thing to say. So we've lost a lot of that. Call centers have replaced in-house customer service.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the workforce has changed. I can't tell you an business I go into that has a receptionist at the front door anymore. And accounting is often outsourced as well.
Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something. Mm-hmm. Maybe there needs to be a rethink in how we do business.
I think there needs to be a rethink on a lot of things.
Excuse me. We do have a couple questions. We got a question from somebody on Facebook. They want to know what Kim and Justin, what your stand is on growing Canadian manufacturing. What's the Liberal position on growing Canadian manufacturing?
Well, we have made it very clear that we believe that manufacturing has been ignored. Ontario specifically, Mr. Harper has not met with the premiers in 8 years. So there's been no discussion about how the federal government can help provinces deal with some of the challenges that they've had. And manufacturing in Ontario particularly is one of them. Like I said, we're not going to compete with Mexico's $8 an hour all in, but we can compete with innovation and technology. And that's where we need to put our money and our focus to bring back manufacturing jobs. And they're not going to come back tomorrow or even next year. You can't sort of tear down, if you will, a manufacturing base and then retool it in a year or so. To your point, you know, your comment about rethinking, there's a lot of things that have to be rethought.
Well, another question, too, from a listener. This is on coming to us through our Facebook feed. And thanks a lot to Colin, by the way.
Thank heavens for Facebook.
Who's dealing with that for us. When are you going to be coming to Keene?
I've been in Keene, and I'm coming up to Keene. I think it's next week I'm back in Keene. I actually had a meet and greet at the wonderful Zim Art a week or so ago. Went and had coffee with the owners of Peachy Keene. and was in Keene at Lang Pioneer Village for the 100th anniversary of the 4-H in Ontario. And you may not have known it was the 100th anniversary of 4-H.
I found out it was the 100th anniversary of 4-H by watching that show, the small town show, Still Standing. With Johnny there on CBC.
So you know what? I'm happy to come to Keene anytime and would love an invitation. If somebody wants to meet with me, we'll be up knocking on doors there. I think it's next week. We've already been there a few times. I had a meet and greet. I've had two of them up there.
Wonderful. So, again, to that fan that sent us a message on Facebook, maybe you want to send a Facebook message to Kim. What's your Facebook page?
Kim Rudd.
Kim Rudd. There you go. I guess it's facebook.com/Kim Rudd. Maybe you want to organize a meet and greet in your own home. I'm Kim, more than happy to come by and speak to a number of people for that. We do have a caller online. We're going to get to that caller. Then we're going to take our second break. Go ahead. You're online. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
I just wondered if you had any plans as you lobby the federal government on behalf of the cleanup in Port Hope, just to add to Ed's comments. If you have any plans to sort of get to the bottom of what would be called a sketchy timeline at best, the information that residents have been receiving here in Port Hope about this most important issue changes about every 3 months when they report back out. And now we are looking at something that really initially was to be finished, capped, the mound finished, the cleanup finished, and we could all get on in our lives this year, 2015.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Has yet to start. It's very discouraging that local politicians who receive regular updates in their council meetings aren't really being given a true picture of the timeline. It changes twice a year, if not more often, and now we're looking at 2017 or 2018 is the most recent blurb that was put out shows. I think anybody with common sense knows that if the mound is not completed, it cannot receive waste. I don't think anybody's confused about where the dirt's going to go. And if the new mound isn't done, it can't receive dirt. Well, so we've all got that concept pretty well. We had it 4 years ago. But can you help us?
Honestly, I don't know. I do know that the process, I agree with you, the process that's been in place has been in there for some time. I have met with a number of the folks involved with it who certainly I know are, certainly from what I understand, are doing their very best. And I expect to some degree, like anything else, there's frustration on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. I don't believe for a minute that there's anyone purposely slowing this down or delaying it. I don't know the technical reasons for the delays or why it would be changed. But I think one of the things that is really important in processes like this is transparency. And, you know, the opportunity, I would certainly support, and I know they have done it in the past, but I'd certainly support more of community meetings where people get to ask those questions and get the answers. And certainly Justin Trudeau and I both said, you know, that's one of the reasons we're doing this. We don't believe government has been accountable enough or transparent enough. And while certainly I think the FAE process has done a good job of putting out information, maybe for residents, there's more that's needed. And I'm happy to ask those questions and do what I can to facilitate that.
Well, that's very much appreciated because, honestly, I think people here do not feel they are intentionally being lied at, but at the same time, a machine as big as Atomic Energy and the Canadian Nuclear Association cannot be constantly confused about mm-hmm. the wrinkles that come up. Can't be that way.
And sometimes that is part of the challenge. The bureaucracy is fairly large, and sometimes things move through at a slower pace than you or I might think would be pace we would use.
It's making it a little unbelievable on our end. People in town are joking that this is a three-generational cleanup,
mm-hmm.
meaning full retirement packages from Atomic Energy, for three consecutive generations.
Well, I will commit to doing what I can to be as aware of what's happening as I can, and if there is anything I can do I believe it's separate entity, but if there's anything I can do to facilitate anything, if I'm happy to do what I can.
Great. Thank you.
Now, I do have a comment on that, and then we're going to take a quick break. We got to run our last bit of commercials, and thankfully Kim has agreed to stay a little past the 6 o'clock hour, so that's wonderful. But I think part of the problem with the cleanup has been that they really did not know the extent to which it was going to be and how big a cleanup it was going to be.
Agree.
I think initially they thought it was going to be, ABC size, and then it turned out that it included this much more and so on.
I think the harbor from the last tour I had, the harbor is one of the things that I don't think was really anticipated to the degree it is, and that's a huge job. So like I said, all the folks I've met working on this are determined to get it done, and as fast as they get it done, understand that they have limitations too.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to Truly Local Radio. This is Northumberland 89.7. The show, The Drive Time. I'm your host, Dave Glover. This is Canada's only holistic political talk show. My guests in the studio are Rob Washburn, my regular co-host for Consider This, and Kim Rudd, your Liberal candidate for Northumberland, Peterborough South. We're going to take our last batch of commercials, and we will be right back. Thank, by the way, to the folks that are sending questions through to Colin. And Colin, you're doing a great job, man. I really appreciate it. And we're going to take that break right now.
Do you like helping out the community? Why not come and volunteer with us here at Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. Oh, there's a little Madonna. She's trying to sneak in there. Sorry, Madonna. No room for you today. In the studio with me are Kim Rudd and Rob Washburn. We are talking politics. What else will we be talking about on The Drive Time? This is Canada's only holistic political talk show. Kim Rudd is my guest. We have been taking questions through our Facebook. Thank you very much to Colin Whitehouse for forwarding those to me, by the way. We do have another question, a question with regards to refugees. The question is, Kim, what are you going to do to help refugees in Canada? And are you prepared to sponsor a family yourself to come to, or help sponsor a family to come to Northumberland?
Well, really good question. And as you know, it's in the top of the news right now. Canadians have traditionally welcomed many refugees. I think under Joe Clark's government, I think we brought 65 Vietnamese refugees. In fact, I remember in Coburg, we had the daycare. Young families of children, and the children didn't speak English, but as young children do, they picked it up extremely quickly. The parents were so happy to be here, and they wanted to contribute to our community, and some of the folks are still in the riding and have done just amazing things. So it makes your heart feel good. Hungary, I can't remember, I think we took in 35,000 refugees. Kosovo, there have been many, many times. I was saying to someone today that I can remember being at the 100 Mile Diet. It's coming up in Grafton. I think it's this weekend, actually. Mm-hmm. And meeting the Syrian refugee family that Joan Chalovich and the church in Grafton brought. Lovely family. Their children were teenagers or young teenagers. And they had a whole community of their church driving them to Peterborough a few times a week for their English lessons, housing them. And I understand they've moved to London, where they have family or people they know, and they're doing very, very well. That is a community group through the church coming together. I know there are lots of them out there that are planning to do that. Mm-hmm. They need some help to do it. It's $30,000, as I understand, which is a lot for a small church, but they're making the commitment because it's not just about the money. It's about the supports when they come. So I have been talking to some folks that approached me and said, what can we do? And we're certainly in some discussions. There are families and community groups here in Coburg and Port Hope, and I talked to one in Newcastle yesterday that are looking at doing some sponsorships, and whatever we can do to help, we should be doing. I think the point, I guess, for me is that private citizens are stepping up to the plate. The government is not. And when Stephen Harper announces that he's, has a plan, he's not changing his plan. But we all know we have lives. You may have the best plan in your life, but something happens. You lose your job. Something happens. You have to look at it and change your plan.
And Stephen Harper's not willing to do this. He's announcing numbers. But the reality is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the number is we've only brought in 12 or 1,500 of the 10,000, 20,000 that's been committed to. So,
well, there's actually a lot of confusion around those numbers. Today there was talk about only nine people actually having been brought in.
Well, because they're bringing into the Iraqi numbers, into the Syrian numbers.
Well, and I'm talking about Syrian numbers because one of the problems, and this again, folks, you know, this is why you really have to listen to what these folks are saying to you when you hear them speak, because they're talking about, you know, oh, well, we've already resettled. But a large cohort of those people, first of all, over 1,300 of them have been privately sponsored. Of the so-called 2,000, the numbers that have been brought in, they're saying they've only resettled about nine families.
Yeah, they haven't crossed.
And the other issue is that what they've done is offered refugee status to Syrians who were here already. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the numbers are skewed. One of the problems that this government has an issue with that came up yesterday from both the NDP and Paul Dewar and Mark Garneau yesterday, who were on Power and Politics, said, look, the United Nations Human Rights Commission, the UNHRC, has said they have more than 13,000 people that have already been pre-screened. Because Harper is saying that they can't let these people in because they need to be screened. They just don't want to willfully let in groups of terrorists, which, again, it's the first time a prime minister has ever said this. But he's saying they've got to be screened. And no one's saying that we want to increase the security risk for Canadians.
Of course not.
But what we do want is those people that have been pre-screened, why aren't they being allowed into the country?
Well, and we hear the numbers about us being number one in the world or number two. Well, we know that's not true. The United Nations put out their numbers, and mm-hmm. we've dropped to number 15 in one. And sorry,
well, we're actually 41st by GDP.
By GDP.
41st, folks.
So what? There's also, I believe it was Mark Garneau and maybe Paul Dewar as well that said, what some countries are doing is they're actually putting people over there on the ground. When we brought the Hungarian refugees over, I believe the minister himself went over and ordered the planes and the boats to bring them over, that we actually put people over on the ground to do that pre-screening to expedite the process of mm-hmm. getting them in. You know, there's an expression called political will, and there isn't political will. From my perspective, there are more barriers being put up. So mm-hmm. the numbers are all sounding good and the sound bites sound good, but the reality isn't happening. So we have committed to increasing that number and expediting that process by doing a number of things, including
pre-screening. So we bring 25,000, I think, is the mm-hmm. number that your party's talked about,
that's right.
Which it was really interesting because it started to sound like a bidding war. But okay, so 25,000 mm-hmm. people, that's more than the population of Coburg.
It is
suddenly going to come into this country. And I think people sometimes they sit back and they go, well, what's going to happen to these people? You know, they're going to need services. They're going to maybe need health care. They're going to need places to live. All these things. What about jobs? And people get worried. You know, I can't even find a good job right now.
We're
bringing all these people in. And I can hear people sitting out there listening to us and saying, what about that mm-hmm. aspect of mm-hmm. it? Could you maybe talk a bit about that, please?
Sure. And I do hear that on occasion from people who don't believe that we should bring. In fact, I've had people tell me that they think we should close our borders completely to any immigrants, or let alone refugees. I don't think that's who we are as Canadians, first of all. I think we as Canadians fundamentally rise to the occasion and the challenge when others are in need. I think of Haiti. I think of, in Japan. Other countries have had catastrophic things happen to them. I keep going back to the Vietnamese boat people because I was doing some research on this, and I'm not going to quote the numbers because I don't have them in my head, but anyone can research it, that the second generation of Vietnamese boat people that came over of that 65,000 have been extremely productive citizens, created jobs, created companies, businesses. And organizations have tracked those refugees to find out what's happened to them. And if you go, and I just did the research yesterday, so it's I haven't had time to sort of dig in a bit more. But if you go back and check those numbers, it says we gave those folks an opportunity because they needed our help, and they have paid us back. And we can all sit here and say, what if that was us? What if that was us that needed help? Do we want other countries? When I look at Germany taking in 50,000 now and the numbers that they're talking about, I have to wonder how come they have the capacity and we don't.
It's a good question. It's a good question. And we're going to take a quick pause here because we're at the top of the hour.
Okay.
We got to do our top of the hour. We do have a caller on line two, and I hope that caller is still there. We're going to get to you in about 3 minutes because we've got to do our top of the hour disclaimer and what have you. I want to get back to the question about the immigration because the person who sent the question said it looks as though you weren't willing to answer the question. I guess the question is, are you willing to sponsor a family? We'll get right back to that in just a moment. But first, here's the disclaimer.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Marley, get up, stand up right here on Northumberland 89.7. Welcome back to the drive time, everybody. Cue the audience, exactly. We've got a great crowd in the studio. Now, we just got a rebuttal because obviously the person who asked the question on Facebook wasn't happy with the response with regards to whether or not you're going to personally sponsor a family to come to Northumberland County.
And fair enough. I thought I had answered the question and I didn't, so I'm happy to do it. As I said, I've been talking to some folks in the community about some ideas they have for sponsorship, whether it's through their church or whether it's a community group or a number of individuals getting together and saying, you know, it is $30,000. That's a lot of money. So is there a way that a group of people could get together and everybody, you know, put in some money to help sponsor an organization to do it? As an individual to do it, it's a job, I think, that I can't even imagine bringing a family, me personally, bringing a family of four people or five people over and saying, here's how we do this. There are agencies and organizations out there that are very good at this. So I will be, and I am in the process with some other folks, of contributing to a local organization that's looking at doing it, and we'll be doing it that way. And there are lots of people who will be doing it anonymously. I don't think I should, you know, promote the fact that I'm doing it. I think it's just what we do. It's like every time you donate to the United Way or you donate to whatever, you just do it because it's the right thing to do. You don't expect to get a banner for it.
Okay. So I hope that answers the question. Yeah. We do have a caller online too, and I hope she's still there. The caller, no, it looks like she's gone. Let's see if she's on the other line. No, unfortunately. So Tina, sorry we didn't get to your question. The lines are still open though if you want to call back, Tina, and ask that question. Be more than happy to take your call at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391. The 2321 number is the preferred number. And just to give you a response to that question, the person said, fair enough. Thank you very much for that. So thank you for answering that question. And again, this is what we're doing here, folks. This is an opportunity for you to speak directly to Kim Rudd through our Facebook page if you want to send us a message through Facebook. And I got to say, again, Colin, you're doing some yeoman service for us on Facebook. Send us a tweet on Twitter as well, at Legant66. You can send me one as well. And it's all good. And I'll be more than happy to get your questions answered. And we do have Tina back on line two. Tina, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I was kind of late calling or listening to the station, but my question is, I don't know if she's already been asked this or not, and she kind of did touch on it with refugees. With the government possibly taking on all these refugees, what are we doing for our young people? I mean, like, these are jobs eventually that are going to be taken, and like, I have two sons that have college and university educations, and they're working part-time jobs. They can't find anything full-time. Like, nobody's taking them on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no initiative. There's no, You know, and any time they apply for a job, they want 2 to 3 years of experience. Well, how can you get 2 to 3 years of experience when you can't even get your foot in the door anywhere?
Can I just...
Government, like, is there going to be any type of initiatives coming up, like anything for businesses to give these young people? And, I mean, we're not even talking young people anymore. We're talking about people that are going into their 30s that still can't even get, you know, still paying off university educations and still not getting full-time jobs anywhere.
So can I just clarify something then? Are you asking whether or not there's a separate initiative for young people, or are you concerned about refugees taking those jobs?
Well, I'm kind of concerned both ways because, you know, right now, and I even hate to say it because it sounds so prejudiced, but I don't mean to be. But if you're young and you're white and you're male, forget it. You're not gonna, you know, you're because there's always, you know, they have to take so many of this and they have to take so many of that. You know, where are we on the list?
Okay, that's a good point. And I just want to clarify, because you sound like someone who's in the same age group as mine. My son just turned 24 today. He's been unemployed for more than 2 years in Toronto. And
I think if I remember correctly listening on the way home, I think I'm a couple years older than you. Yes,
well,
we are in the same situation.
So we are in the same boat. And the problem for my son, to be honest with you, Tina, is he's not competing against people his own age. He's actually competing against single mothers, people who've held jobs for long times, who've lost long-term jobs. So the real issue for young people getting hired, and I hate to say this because a lot of employers are out there going, that's not me, but the real issue is, why hire a young person? Why hire a young white male who's only working for beer money? That's the thought process, when you can hire someone who's desperate, someone who needs to pay a mortgage, or someone who has to pay for other things. So that's
what?
Go ahead.
No. Like, I have my one son works three jobs to pay his, you know, like his university, you know, and OSAP back and this and that. And, you know, it's, I try to help him out as much as I can, you know, but.
Well, Tina, you know, my oldest daughter, whose birthday it is today, because you missed the beginning of the show, who's 36, she's a teacher, and they had to move to Kitchener-Waterloo because she got on the on-call list finally in Kitchener-Waterloo. She tried here, couldn't get on.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand exactly what you're saying. And her family, she and her family had to move back in with us for a year while they were figuring out how this whole move would work. And I hear that knocking on doors where parents are having their kids, and not just their teenage kids from university, but their adult kids moving back because they have to. So for me, and probably why I'm so passionate about job creation is I see job creation being the answer to so much of this. In terms of the refugee crisis and bringing in refugees, there is a sponsorship program. There is a whole sort of process around refugees that help them integrate into the community. Some of them coming are professionals. Lots of them coming are professionals. Lots with family already here who will assist with this process. So I will say that I guess for me, the importance of job creation, not just for your sons, but for Dave's point about single moms, about anybody, is the answer to this. So that's where I think our focus needs to be, our energies need to be, and our innovation or innovative thinking need to be. So that's certainly what I'm going to do, and what I've done in the past and what I'm going to continue to do. And I know I have the support of Justin Trudeau because he appointed me to the economic team to help spearhead the economy with small business and entrepreneurship. So I'm feeling positive about going forward, and I'll tell you, I'll work as hard as I can to bring those jobs here.
Yeah, because I look at even some and excuse me, Dave, I'm sorry. But I even look at like the CBC, which is government, right? Run by the government. You can't even walk into that door unless you have 3 to 5 years experience. Mm-hmm. And even for a job that is, I know, like, he's capable of doing, you know. And it just blows me away because I'm thinking, why are you asking for, and it's the same as even in the manufacturing too. Okay, like, I'm lucky. Most of my children have
further education. But even to get a manufacturing job, you have to have college.
Teen, I'm just going to say there's the other end of the spectrum, too, in terms of the employment side. So we have one of the highest youth unemployment rates, no question. There's lots that needs to be done. I will say, though, we do have seniors. I'm knocking on doors. I've had seniors telling me they have to sell their house because they can't afford to live there anymore. They didn't expect to live so long. You go into some of the establishments and you see more mature people working behind the counter. That's often not because they just want to get out of the house. That's often because they need it to pay their bills. So we've got it in both sides of the spectrum. So what the creation of jobs, the creation of sustainable supports for seniors that allow them to live with dignity. That's another whole conversation that we don't have enough time for on this show, but I'm sure at some time we will have the conversation. So thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
I empathize with you there on that one, Tina. The other thing is I know you probably didn't get the answer you were looking for necessarily, but...
That is how I am going to judge my, like, how I am going to be voting. You know, is going to be the person who, because, I'm sorry, Kim, unfortunately, I'm voting for the big guys instead of the little ones, you know, for the area. So, and that's what I'm going to be looking for from, you know, or listening to in the next little while from, you know, Justin and Mulcair and, well, not Harper, but anyway.
Oh, you mean the leaders? I know I'm short, but I was wondering who the big guys are. Fair enough. Well, I will tell you, keep an eye. There's some very important announcements coming out in the next week and few weeks, so please keep an eye out. I think you'll be from all the parties, I'm sure, but certainly I'm pleased with the lot that we have still in the hopper to come out.
Well, there you go. Thanks, stay tuned. I've only got 40 days till the election. It's only 40 days. Thanks a lot, Tina. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
So we've been talking a lot, Dave, about economics and
we
jobs
really have.
And
that's
a lot of stuff.
I would mind
changing this a bit because I know that healthcare is a number one or number two issue for a lot of people. And we have a report going to be coming out in the next few weeks from the Hay Group about our local hospital. What are you going to do to help support our hospital? Because there's a lot of fear that there's going to be major cuts here. We're going to see a major restructuring of our services, and it could have detrimental effect on our community. What are you going to do?
Well, a couple of things. One, first of all, the actual responsibility for healthcare funding, what determine it as we get to the local levels from the provincial government. However, the federal government plays a huge role in that because of the health care accord. The health care accord that expired in 2014 and has been given 2 years extra life. And not everybody knows, but the extra 2 years it was given, there was always a 6% escalator built into that accord when the Liberal government put it in place 12 years ago now or 11 years ago. When Mr. Harper extended it for 2 years, he cut the escalator in half. There was no warning to provinces, so they're all, you know, trying to do more with less. Having not met with the premiers and the health ministers has not helped this, because you don't write a health care accord in the back of a napkin. So Justin Trudeau has promised to meet with them within 90 days, and the health care accord will be front and center of that discussion. In my personal opinion, because when people ask, I mostly often give my personal opinion. I think healthcare needs to be turned on its head. We have a system that was designed 50, 60 years ago, and our population is different. I mentioned about the couple I met who had to sell their house because they didn't plan to live this long. We're living. Medicine has made that possible. A whole bunch of things. I was talking to the person who heads up CARP in this area, and she said the actuaries now, if you're playing for your, you know, if you're good and at 30 or so playing for your retirement, they're playing men, I believe, to live to the age of 91 and women 93. So that just tells you how much longer our healthcare system is going to be needed for each individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to look at prevention. I believe we have to look at things like healthy eating and spend some money in that area. I also believe that the band-aids and the plugs that we've been putting in it
are starting, you know, the dike is starting to show its
age. All that's very good, and a lot of people say those things. Mm-hmm. But on a local level, we could be losing our hospital as we know it. I mean, we're not going to lose the building. We're not. But there's going to be deep changes people are expecting from this Hay Group. What are you going to do locally to help us?
Well, personally, on a level, I do what I can to support my hospital through the foundation. So Tom and I are very, very pleased to do what we can. And there's certainly a lot of other people that do that. So I do step up to the plate on a personal level. I was chair of the physician recruitment that brought the eight physicians, and we didn't offer them big dollars like lots of other communities were. We were offering them a lifestyle. We helped with some movie expenses, that kind of thing. I'll do whatever I can. Those are the conversations that, once this report comes out, have to happen. What the federal government role would be, certainly I would like to, once the report comes out, to sit down and have the conversation. I don't know if you know, but the Nurses Association is having a debate. I think that's very important. I'm sure this is going to be at the top of the debate. And you're hearing from the frontline people about what needs to happen. That's all information that I need to be able to help, how do I say this, to help influence or help inform that discussion around the healthcare accord. Just saying, to your point about, you know, turning it on side, when I say rethinking it, we have to rethink home care. We have to rethink long-term care. There's so many things.
Pharmacare.
I've been talking. There's a woman who lives in Port Hope. I won't mention her name, but she's been with U of T for many, many years, and this is her specialty, healthcare policy. And my two of my PhD researchers and I have met with her. She's a wealth of information. So we've been doing all of this research. Once the report comes out, then we'll find out, you know, so you get down to brass tacks, they say, I guess.
Well, I guess the issue for a lot of voters out there is the fact that, you know, every election everyone says, oh, we've got to talk about health care. But what we are really needing to talk about, and this is a message from Jim Stanford, actually, is the fact that the sleeper issue of this campaign is the Conservative Party plan to phase out federal funding in health care. That is the party plan. Stephen Harper's been anti-public health care since he was with the National Citizens Coalition.
Dave, I don't think that's just a health care plan. I think Stephen Harper tends to forget that we are a federation and we have a role to play. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of provinces and territories. And there is a concern, and I raised this maybe a show or two ago, where I said one of the concerns I have, if Stephen Harper gets in, is that he will take the funding, maybe not all of it, because he may keep some to balance his budget, quote unquote, is that he will give the provinces X number of dollars. PEI, here's your money. BC, here's your money, and you guys figure it out. The healthcare accord and healthcare in our country is part of our national fabric and not something that I think should be dispersed for expediency's sake.
One of the things you've said now a couple of times has been the fact that Harper has not met with the province. But that's collectively. He has met with them individually, and I think that's important that people understand that.
Yeah, that's the...
How's that different?
It's very different, because I think that's the history of the Harper government's been the divide and divisive sort of mantra, that we pit one region against the other region, one group of, you know, group of people against another, trying to negotiate with each individually without negotiating with the entity that is the province. And we as a country, I'll go back to the country. We, Ontario has been a have four, or been a four province. We've been a have not province, you know, in some, arguably to some. We've had provinces that have gone through very difficult times. And Ontario still gives the most money to the federal coffers as a province. We do it because we know there are other provinces that need our help. So if you start negotiating and having those discussions individually, why would you have help from other provinces? Nobody knows what's going on. So the premiers have taken the lead, and they've been sort of, with, in the absence of federal leadership, the provinces and territories have been meeting. Again, we're a federation. We're not a group of provinces.
And we saw in the most recent First Minister's Conference, I mean, one of the biggest issues that's come up of late is this idea of interprovincial trade barriers. It's easier to buy a bottle of wine. We know there's a guy in New Brunswick who just got busted for bringing beer across the border. So, again, that brings the whole idea to the floor.
And interprovincial trade barriers, absolutely an issue. There's no question. But so is interprovincial work.
you know, going to work. If you have a ticket in this province, you can't work in Quebec. I know I was talking to some folks in a union. Roger Kuzner, who's been our critic for labor, came down to the riding, and we talked to a number of folks, including Chris Levitt from the Steelworkers Union. But some of the conversation was around, well, if I'm ticketed here, I can't work there. Well, those kinds of things have to, you know, they're not healthy for an economy mm-hmm. either. I'm
and,
not saying
and
I
they're
have
not going to go
answers.
Away with one-on-ones with the prime minister.
No,
right?
They're going to go away when we have national discussions about national issues.
And one of the, you know what I want to, and I'm going to throw this out there, folks, and this isn't Kim's opinion; it's simply mine. And that's why I have a disclaimer at the beginning of my show. I mean, the reality is it's a lot easier to bully somebody when you're speaking to them one-on-one. When you're Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, and you're looking at someone, you're the leader of the Confederation, and you can turn to the Premier of ABC province, doesn't matter what province, and say, well, look, you're either with us, man, or you're not going to get anything. It's that simple. And that's how Stephen Harper operates. We know that's how he operates. We're going to take our next break. I think Kim's going to be out of here pretty shortly. I know we've really taken up a lot of your time. I know you'd rather be out door knocking, but this has been a great opportunity. And I want to thank the listeners, by the way, who've called in. I want to thank Tina and Ed and Mary Lou and Joanna for supplying your questions. And also to Colin Whitehouse, who's dealing with our Facebook page this afternoon as well, sending us questions through Twitter. We love getting your questions. It's been a really great part of the show. We're going to take a break, as I said. When we come right back, I think we're going to probably wrap it up with Kim. It's about 22 minutes after 6, Kim, so we may have another couple of moments. But in the meantime, just a quick reminder, you are listening to Canada's only holistic political talk show. I'm Dave Glover. This is The Drive Time on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Keep your dial tuned right here. And welcome back to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. This is Canada's only holistic political talk show. My guest in the studio is Kim Rudd, your candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South for the Liberal Party of Canada, and Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is my regular co-host for Consider This, which is heard every Wednesday right here on Truly Local Northumberland 89.7. Rob, you had a question?
Last one would be about veterans. I know we have a lot of veterans in our community. I know there was an announcement made recently. What is the Liberal Party doing for veterans?
Well, a couple of things. One, especially given the in 2011 when I ran, Trenton was in our riding, and even a larger part of veterans were within the constituency at that time. And I heard some stories that would break your heart. And I feel very strongly that we have moral obligation to support our veterans. I was very happy with the announcement, giving veterans the option of taking a pension or a lump sum. I think I was really pleased about the education piece, that they have up to 4 years of education once they come out of the services. That's really important. I was speaking to someone, the ride, the horses that came through the ride. I was chatting I was over in Port Hope with them. And this woman, she'd been retired. She didn't look 50. She'd been retired, just came out a couple years ago. And she'd been waiting 2 years to see someone. She has operational stress injury. Those are the kinds of things. We've committed to open the 9 veterans offices. I think that's really important. And increasing the decreasing the wait time and increasing the services for the veterans. What does that mean? To me, it means that veterans get to live it with dignity. Because right now I have veterans out canvassing with me. There are veterans who, and they're fine. They've retired. They don't have any issues. But lots of their friends and their colleagues do and did. And when I hear that more vets have died from suicide than were killed in Afghanistan, that tells me we have, and those are the only ones we know about. The challenges with families, the spouses are supporting the children, and the challenges they're going through. So the council that Justin Trudeau has on veterans and retired police and experts came up with the policy that they felt would best be able to address those needs of our veterans. And again, it's not just because we can do it and we should have been doing it. We have to do it. My grandfather was a veteran. He died in his 40s from the effects of the gas. And his kids were 2, 5, and 7 when he died. And my father grew up, as did his brothers, with my grandmother in a wheelchair living on a pension from the military at the time. These weren't easy lives.
And we think that we're a modern society with all of these conveniences. But when people are going through these challenges, they're often going through them in silence. They're proud people. They don't want to reach out. And it's almost an insurance system that has been created. You know, the appeal deny. I think there's another statistic I read that 67% of the people who got service were on their appeal. Well, when your appeal produces that kind of number, mm-hmm. those people should have been through at the front end. Mm-hmm. That just tells me we're going to keep trying to tire you out and eventually you will give up. A good friend, my daughter, she went to school with a young girl from here, went to the East High School, and she committed suicide when she went back to Afghanistan for what I believe was her second tour. I mean, she has parents, a husband, left behind. Those are the people we have to support. They're putting our veterans, our military are putting their life out there for us, and we have a duty mm-hmm. to respond. So I'm really pleased with the announcement, and it's one of the things – see, I have goosebumps. It's one of the things that's near and dear to my personal heart as well.
Last quick question.
Sure.
What's the role of agent experience?
What's the role of agent experience?
In politics.
Perspective. I think it's perspective. It is understanding that life is not, you know, it's not a yellow brick road. It's not straight. It throws you curveballs all the time. You have to be able to adapt. You have to recognize that that you're in this life with a whole bunch of influences around you, and you're influencing a whole bunch of things as well. And you have a responsibility to do that in a positive and productive manner, I guess I'd say. But the other thing for me that perspective gives you, life gives you experience, I'm very proud of my accomplishments. It's been hard for me as a candidate in the last two elections to actually talk to people about them. I tend to be more, you know, I just do things. But what I recognize is that there have been people counting on me for the past 4 years. Whether it was creating the daycare or creating jobs or doing, they were counting on me. And I stepped up to the plate. And that's the experience. Understanding that you have a role here and that you have a responsibility. So here I am. It's not a job for the faint of heart. As you know, I've been at this for a while and I'm determined. I've come in second. I'm determined to make it number one.
I'm not going to let you go before we get a couple of things we're going to really quickly run at. First of all, the poll numbers that just came out from 308.com for Northumberland, Peterborough South. The Conservatives' lead has now dropped since essentially from a high of 43.7 down to 39.8. The Liberals are up to 35.5 with the NDP at 19.4 right now and the Greens at 4.9. Now, the NDP put out a brochure a little recently saying that the NDP, this is a clear election, your choice, is that the NDP finished second in 121 ridings. But this wasn't one of those ridings.
No, it wasn't. There was a piece that was left out on people's doors, my door, that says Russ Christensen and Tom Mulcair's NDP are best chance of defeating Stephen Harper because 102 ridings, I believe, or 121 ridings, mm-hmm. they came in second. But that's not the case. I mean, Russ is running for his fifth time. In the last four times, he's come in third. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll put out information there, but my information is going to be factually correct. I'm not going to sort mm-hmm. of mislead. And I think that's misleading.
Is the fact that you've been campaigning now essentially for the last couple of years, because you really have been out there.
Probably since 2009.
So trying to get people to know who you are. You know,
and last election was my first time. Right. I knew I was known in Coburg in the area, and I had to work hard. The only place I knew was known as Coburg in the area. So I had to work hard to get to people, you know, to get to know me. Mm-hmm. At that, you know, Russ ran last time too, and he'd had three elections under his belt by that time. And I came in second. I'm proud of that. To me, that just shows how hard I worked being a virtually unknown. Mm-hmm. And I'm not an unknown in this election.
You're not an
unknown
this time.
And the polls are telling you that, I think.
I think they are. So the guesstimate from 308.com, folks, is that 61% of the riding will vote. The NDP and the Conservatives will, based on if the vote were held today, and actually this is from the 6th, so if the vote were held on Monday, I guess, what would be the results? And at this point, the numbers are really tightening up for the Liberals. It's tightening up for the Liberals across the province of Ontario. I'm going to wish you good luck out there on the hustings. Kim, I want to thank you for coming into the studio. Thanks to all of our listeners.